I want to take a second to remind you to sign up for the Poso Daily Brief. It is completely free. It'll be one email that's sent to you every day. You can stop the endless scrolling, trying to find out what's going on in your world. We will have this delivered directly to you, totally for free. Go to humanevents.com/Poso. Sign up today. It's called the Poso Daily Brief. Read what I read for show prep. You will not regret it. Humanevents.com/Poso. Totally free. The Poso Daily Brief.
What happens when the fourth turning meets fifth generation warfare?
A commentator, international social media sensation, and former Navy intelligence veteran.
This is Human Events with your host, Jack Posobiec.
Deliver us from
what we
evil.
Are seeing, this explosion or explosions around the city of Isfahan is indeed an Israeli attack against Iran. This is the retaliation that we have thought may be coming for several days now, ever since Iran carried out that strike last weekend.
A full jury of 12 now sworn in former President Donald Trump's hush money criminal trial, after the day began with drama surrounding two jurors dismissed. The full jury now including an investment banker, security engineer, retired private wealth manager, speech therapist, physical therapist, someone in e-commerce, and a product development manager.
I'm supposed to be in a lot of different places campaigning, but I've been here all day.
This is an American president. This is the office of the United States of America's highest office. And we're doing this? This is sheer stupidity. And I'll tell you what should happen. This should be pushed until after he wins or doesn't win. This should be not part of this election cycle at all. And this is not a Trump-loving comment. This is about the American brand, where I bring capital from all around the world to invest here. We look like clowns.
Yes.
Are you ready to choose freedom over democracy? Because that's America.
Yes.
I will not speak to the particulars of the case, given the pending criminal prosecution.
No, I'm sure. Well, of course you don't want to, because it is an absolutely damning indictment of your policies. Let's just review Jose Ibarra, rather, and how he came to be here. On September the 8th, 2022, he was encountered by United States Border Patrol in El Paso, Texas, and was paroled into the United States due to lack of detention capacity. You just never wanted to cop to it.
House Speaker Mike Johnson's political future could be on the line this weekend. He's hoping to hold votes on a series of bills that include billions in military aid for Israel and Ukraine. Johnson will likely need help from Democrats to get the bills passed.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard today's edition of Human Events Daily, live from Washington, D.C. Today is April 19th, 2024, Anno Domini. A man has just set himself on fire outside the Trump courtroom in New York City. We're looking at this. I've got images from, and these are extremely graphic images. And suffice to say, it does not look like this individual will survive. This is similar to another series of self-immolations that have gone on recently regarding the Israel-Gaza conflict. Of course, at this point, we have no indication as to why this person chose to do this. We do see strewn around the body, and I've got some other footage that I'm looking at that's honestly, it's just too graphic to play. Because, and it's on Zero Sum 24 on his Telegram page. So everyone within the sound of my voice, go follow Zero Sum 24 on X and then get access to his subscriber only Telegram page. There is video here and it shows flyers around the guy's, the individual's body. They're colored, many in pink. There's white around. Now, of course, this is the protest area and we don't know for sure if this is the, or these are the flyers that the man himself was carrying. It could have been brought by somebody else. So what we're trying to do is make sure we can determine who exactly this guy was. And I've instructed everybody out there. I put this out on Twitter. I've instructed all the producers here at Human Events Daily. We are going to scour for anyone who has footage of the protest area prior to this incident to see if we can find anyone, particularly who's handling the pink flyers, who's holding the pink flyers, and if we can find anyone who's going around with any type of accelerant, any type of torch or something like this, and make sure that we can try to identify what's actually going on. This is a horrific situation. Obviously, it appears to me that the man is, if he is not dead, he is severely, severely wounded. And at this point, all we can do is show the footage as much as possible to try to identify what exactly happened here, but more importantly, identify what's going on in our country. We'll be right back. Mike Benz joins us. Jumping on my
computer, going to pre-order town. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the best ways that you can support us here at Human Events and the work that we do is subscribing to us on our Rumble channel. Make sure you're subscribed. You hit the notifications so you'll never miss a clip. You'll never miss a new live episode, and we're putting them out every single day of the week.
Far, but I got a hankering, a yearning deep inside. For this book called Unhumans, I just can't hide.
All right, Jack Posobiec back live here, Human Events Daily. Of course, we're keeping an eye on everything going on with this breaking situation outside of President Trump's courtroom trial. Real quick message from our partners. For 10 years, Patriot Mobile has been America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. And when I say only, trust me, they're the only one. Glenn and the team have been great supporters of this show, which is why I am proud to partner with them. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you the ability to access all three major networks, which means you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to without funding the left. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending the message that you support free speech, religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responder heroes. They're 100% U.S.-based customer service team. Makes switching easy. So keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. Their team will help you find the best plan for your needs. Just go to patriotmobile.com/poso. Get free activation when you use promo code POSO. Join me and make the switch today. Patriotmobile.com/poso. That's patriotmobile.com/poso. Just been sent here by Still Boneless a new tweet from Henry Rozoff. Henry Rozoff is a Brooklyn-based political news reporter who's covering the situation outside the trial courtroom. Listen to this. Breaking, can confirm a man has lit himself on fire in the protest area outside the Trump criminal trial. Police are now investigating a large sign that he held along with smaller pamphlets. An amateur photographer told me he told her to back up before dousing himself in gasoline. So we don't have any indication as to what exactly was going on. Clearly, this is an example of someone who wanted to saw the bank of cameras, saw the international attention that was there at the protest area, wanted to do something that would get everyone's attention. He certainly has. We're told it's a male individual. But again, we don't have information yet on what exactly was on that sign. A lot of people asking, is this another Aaron Bushnell? Is this another? We know, obviously, the Free Palestine rallies have been going on throughout New York City this week. And so it's a possibility. But again, we have no information yet. And we're going to be covering this as much as possible. Mike Benz from the Foundation for Freedom Online is with us for free. Yeah, I'm getting all mixed up here. Is joining us. Benz, what do you make of this type of situation? Why is it that, how have we gotten to the point where self-immolations are now being seen in the United States? This is the tactic that is formerly associated with like Buddhists during the Vietnam War. We never really saw this in America since the 1970s. So what's going on?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, in this case, there's a weird poetry because of the parallels of what they're doing to Trump and the Salem witch trials. I mean, this is very much a modern update of that where they set the witches on fire. So I very much see the attempt to set the defendant in the case on fire inside. I can't imagine that it's one of Trump's supporters on the outside who's doing this. But, you know, this is one of these things where, you know, there's so many other protected acts of violent protest, because none of these Soros prosecutors will prosecute them if they throw feces or tomatoes, you know, at the courtroom door. So, you know, this type of faux desperation by having to light yourself on fire, this is the sort of thing that our press used to lionize when foreign populations would do such a thing, for example, in Tiananmen Square, standing before the tank, or these kinds of light yourself on fire demonstrations that were lionized by U.S. press during the Arab Spring. But in this case, when it comes to the sort of anti-Trump protesters, they've got a free license to protest any way they please. This kind of self-immolation was always seen as a message of last act of desperation. They're the ruling party. It frankly means nothing to me to see someone light themselves on fire in protest against Trump.
And it's really interesting because, you know, this is continuing. I'm scanning right now. Of course, you know, we're looking at this. There's some close-ups. I mean, the footage is all over the internet at this point. And yet I can't yet find anyone who's got direct information on the actual sign, on what he was holding. It seems like it goes up. CNN was live when it happened, and yet they weren't able to get their camera. I'm looking right now. Yeah, they weren't able to get the camera around close enough. I'm sure we'll get the pamphlets out sooner rather than later. It's just a matter of time, given the speed of the internet today. And that really is, you know, Benz, that is the one thing that they've been trying to shut down so long. The fact that when something happens in the real world, we have the ability, particularly, and I'm just going to say it, particularly with X, there's no other platform out there that allows the speed and the specificity of searching by direct terms for an entire just, you know, open sandbox format anywhere in the world. And even no offense to Elon, but, and I'm sure he'll understand what I mean by this, even X as it is now, if you go back to like 2014, 2013, it was even, I would say, more powerful in terms of how open it was. That's why in 2015, 2016, Trump was able to use, you know, Twitter back then, was able to use it so well because of its dissemination power. Benz, why is that dissemination power such a threat to the status quo, the blob, as you call it, the matrix? Why are they so scared of us, you know, just being able to look up this stuff on our own?
Yeah, well, X really is the most powerful platform on that, because all the other social media platforms are much more of a walled garden. You know, Facebook is mostly for personal posts. There are political groups, but they are very segmented and hard to search. YouTube is commonly referred to as a social media platform, but it's 99.9% consumers and only 0.0. You don't just immediately become a journalist when you watch a YouTube video. But the retweet button on Twitter is very powerful because you essentially become a platform. You essentially become a journalist, a micro journalist of the story by republishing it on your own platform the moment you hit the retweet button. So it's a very unique platform that way for breaking news. And of course, whoever breaks the news shapes the narratives. And this is why you had, after the 2016 election, tens of millions of dollars from the federal government here in the U.S., from the federal government in the UK and all across NATO, to try to create what were called rapid response units, or RRUs, to be able to control rapid breaking news on any sensitive issue so that you could have an instant clampdown on any gray-listed or blacklisted news institutions from being able to influence the very first outbreak of news. And these censorship institutions were very specific about this, that first, you know, 12 to 24 hours of a breaking event set the kind of parameters, because the first impression cuts deepest. And so they were even contemplating in 2017, 2018, ways to install these virality circuit breakers so that you would have authoritative news would be the only basically, you know, institutions, whitelisted news institutions would be the only ones allowed to go viral on something when news breaks. And then you'd have, you know, basically the internet would open up a little bit after that 24, 48 hour period. And we actually saw this happen in the Kyle Rittenhouse case and several others.
CNN had a reporter on who was yelling, "A man has emblazoned himself." Just see the clip now. It looks like they've got him on a hospital stretcher, by the way. And again, I'm able to do this, right? I'm able to do this in real time because we've got, you know, just got a basic laptop here, and I could do the same thing with cell phone. And that really shows the. Andrew Breitbart used to talk about this all the time. He said, if you have a smartphone, you are now as powerful as any journalist out there. And you have the ability. I always say, by the way, that the most powerful journalist, and I think you'll appreciate this, in all of 2016 wasn't any member of conservative media, certainly wasn't any member of liberal media or corporate media. You know who it was? It was the off-duty fireman in New York City at the 9/11 memorial who turned his camera when Hillary Clinton fell out at the 9/11 memorial in a way that all of the, just like today at the courtroom trial of Trump, all the media of the world were there and none of them filmed Hillary having this episode. And because we know that the stress of that campaign had put her in a health situation, it's just true, and everyone was covering it up. He takes the video, and where did he upload it? He uploaded it to Twitter.
Yeah, they would call that a crisis event, and the crisis managers and these rapid response units would be deployed to basically saturate the field and work with the tech companies to prohibit the coverage of, you know, of anyone who might shape that crisis event. And, you know, it's exactly right. I mean, I remember immediately as soon as that event happened with Hillary Clinton and being thrown in the back of the truck, you know, basically like a hunk of meat, that was that sparked a huge controversy around whether she was even healthy enough to sustain a presidency, which on top of her already weak campaign was, you know, threatened to topple it. She basically stopped campaigning for something like a couple months, before that. She was basically MIA for much of the summer. And then you throw in the health problems and everything else. And, you know, that became a crisis. And the management of that crisis was performed through internet censorship.
Real quick, Ben, I think it's out of the New York Post. They have some sources saying that the man was sitting on a bench and was possibly homeless, that he threw his belongings on the ground and doused him before going up in flames, rushed by first responders to the hospital. So we've got competing stories out there. Someone said he was holding a pamphlet. We could see the pamphlets in the video. But again, like I said before, we don't know that they were his. It said something about him holding a sign. Homeless people hold signs asking for money, that sort of thing. So it could be many things, and we are covering it as fast as the information comes in because we have X. And Mike Benz understands the power of that. Come right back here to Benz Daily.
It's been a mystery. The hidden tales of the communist history. I want to know the truth, what really went down. So I'm jumping on my computer. In the pre-order town. Pre-order in love,
human. All right, Jack Posobiec here, live, Human Events Daily. Again, breaking news, we're working through that. But I got a question first for everybody. Mike Benz is going to know about this. And I got a question for Mike Benz. Mike, have you ever had a conversation with someone and the next thing you know, you're getting ads for the products that match exactly what you're talking about? You know, between big government, big tech, corporate America, and criminals, your privacy is compromised 24/7. This is on top of the side effects from radiation that cell phone companies swear is safe and brain-numbing effects of social media. I want Mike Benz to detox from his phone today with Silent. Silent is a light and portable Faraday sleeve for Mike Benz's mobile device that protects his privacy, security, and health Its patented silent pocket Faraday technology blocks harmful radiation and all the wireless signals that will give Mike Benz the peace of mind that his personal data will never end up in the wrong hands, at least while he's using this. Go to silent.com today, slnt.com/POSO. Use promo code POSO. Save 15% plus free shipping on qualifying orders. Look, guys like us, we're in the spotlight. We're challenging the government. Klaus Schwab, the big corporate interest, is on top of the left. We have to protect our privacy at all times. I am so thankful that Silent was created. slnt.com/POSO. Again, that's slnt.com/POSO. Use promo code POSO. Save your 15% plus free shipping on qualifying orders. Mike Benz, in addition to protecting your data and all, what I really wanted to ask you about before I knew that this the situation was going on today, the blobbing. I want to talk about the blobbing of Mike Johnson, Speaker Mike Johnson, and really get into this question of the Yankee Cowboy Alliance, something that you and I have done these incredible specials on. You've walked everyone through this. How does somebody go from being this movement conservative to getting one taste of power, being, you know, just up jumped very high to the speakership? And then suddenly we get sold this bill of goods, and all the media is out there. He's got a tough job. And it's he's a statesman who's balancing the needs of the party with the needs of the country. And it just so happens that the needs of the country are Pfizer reauthorization, no warrants for wiretapping, and funding to, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars to foreign wars, chief of which, of course, is Ukraine. Mike Benz, you're not surprised, are you?
I'm not surprised. But, you know, the level of this is quite extraordinary. I mean, the number of records that Speaker Johnson has already broken in terms of betrayal of his own party is the magnitude and the speed of it. I actually would use the word a little bit surprised. I think that there was a worst case scenario that was a tail risk fear that it might manifest as this, but the speed at which the worst case scenario manifests itself is quite something. I mean, we have now had the speaker introduce multiple bills where there were more Democrat votes than Republican votes, despite a Republican majority in the House. That's, you can't ask for a better deal as the other side. It's almost like you control the House. The Speaker, who's from the other party, is getting more votes from the minority party than from his own majority party. That is a very difficult thing to understand without first appreciating the GOP civil war between the foreign policy establishment blob faction and the domestic focused MAGA populist faction. And you know, there were a lot of folks who were disenchanted by Kevin McCarthy and were excited for the new prospects of a new speaker under the kind of presupposition that McCarthy was doing what he was doing because he was a coward or because he just didn't have the stones to stand up to Washington. And what we needed was somebody who would be common sense and do what's right for the people and resist blob pressure. That was the kind of impetus between Matt Gaetz' drive for Matt Gaetz' drive to get a new speaker in place. And what we saw with Johnson was even worse than McCarthy. I mean, McCarthy never introduced a bill that got more Democrat votes than Republican votes. McCarthy never changed the House rules to be able to basically block his own party from any sort of challenge. And, you know, you saw McCarthy under a lot of pressure and really trying to negotiate as much as he could with his own party. But, you know, Mike Johnson is in a position of weakness. The left-wing press was very aggressive towards Johnson when he was first being nominated, arguing that he was too poor, basically. He wasn't a billionaire like Trump. He didn't have hundreds of thousands of dollars in the bank like traditional congressmen do when they start, as they made their way up the ranks of Congress, that he was, you know, so financially vulnerable, they were arguing he could barely afford his own mortgage. What was his retirement plan going to be? Who would he have to sell out to in order to secure his own personal future? You know, he's not exactly an old man. And at the time, I think a lot of right-wing folks responded to that by saying, well, he's a man of principle. He can withstand pressure simply because he's a man of faith and he's a man of principle, and he'll just do what's right. And I think that vastly underestimated the power of the blob to exert pressure. You know, that right now there is a fog of war because Mike Johnson has claimed that all of these betrayals were principle based, that despite having hundreds of thousands of FBI abuses that he personally witnessed campaigning to add a warrant requirement to FISA for 10 years before he became speaker, that a single confidential briefing in a skiff once he became speaker 180'd everything he'd stood for 10 years. I don't believe that for a second. I think it was Justin Amash, the representative, who said that what he learned in the skiff is that he would no longer be speaker. Not that he learned anything about the FISA warrant being an attack on national security. And look, here's the plain facts of it. I was part of the cheerleading squad once Johnson's nomination was finalized, because I think there was a sense of optimism that maybe what was underlying this push for a new speaker was a kind of grand strategy in getting good people in place. But that process never reckoned with the institutional forces that exert pressure on the speakership. The speaker's job is to get in the House, which primarily controls budget, is to do budget log rolling and negotiations in order to get get initiatives funded or defunded to support the priorities of the party. That's the main function of the House Speaker, in addition to selecting the committee chairs. Well, in this case, it's basically spoken for itself. Johnson has decided what the budget priorities are, and he steamrolled the exact faction of the party that got him in office. It was the Matt Gaetz wing that got him in office, that took down McCarthy. And so I think what's being revealed here is a kind of Iago figure, a kind of Littlefinger from Game of Thrones, if you will. I think part of the slickness of Mike Johnson, the reason that he was so unilaterally backed during the time of his nomination, was this idea that he got along with everyone in the party. And I think what was underestimated was the degree to which he got along with those who very much wanted to make that faction of his own party that supported him part of the dustbin of history.
Yeah, I mean, there's potentially, I guess my analysis is very much along the same lines, although I don't know if I would go with Littlefinger, or I think in this case, or even Lord Varys, the Lord of Spiders. I almost feel like this is almost like a Lancel Lannister kind of character, where, this is a guy who gets brought up by one faction and basically installed in a position and says, this is how you will act. But because that individual has no personal agency or not much of a strong moral constitution or just personal constitution, that he gets immediately grabbed by another faction and told, you're going to work for us now, and we're going to give you more power, and we're going to give you more glory. Your name is going to go down in history. You're going to be known as this great figure. And then eventually they just, use and abuse him, and they find their next Mike Johnson, they find their next bespeckled, backbench congressman from Louisiana. So, remains to be seen, of course, but sorry, you triggered my Game of Thrones autism. And, at the end of the day, though, what people should come back from understanding this is that there is a powerful alliance in Washington, D.C. It's referred to as the Uniparty. Mike Benz has given us this great lens for looking at this as the Yankee Cowboy Alliance. And the importance of having a lens to look through politics is, number one, it should be descriptive. That's number one. But it should, if it's accurate, it should also be predictive. And if it's predictive, then that means it should predict behavior. And what can I say, Mike? You predicted it.
Yeah, well, in this case, I think what really needs to happen within the Republican Party is there needs to be, when these type of speaker battles happen, there needs to be transparency about what that speaker's plan is to resist blob pressure. This is one of these things where Johnson was mum for about 3 days after he betrayed everyone on FISA, and all we got was basically a 20-second clip from a random journalist in a hallway who managed to corner him when he was on the way into an elevator, when he revealed, oh, it was actually one confidential briefing that caused me to betray 10 years worth of campaigning. And this is the sort of thing where there should really be a pledge by whoever is at the top of House or Senate leadership in the Republican Party to do a kind of FDR-style fireside address every week and answer questions. Come on X. And do a weekly space where you are accountable to people publicly for these kinds of questions so that we can really probe it and understand what kind of pressures are being put. Benz, for example, we know that.
Oh, I was going to say we've only got about a minute left, and I know that you've got some points as well as ways for people to do live streams with you. So please let people know.
Yes. So at Mike Benz Cyber is the best way for that on X. I post 30 times a day on there. The one point I want to leave with, though, is we got news that both Merrick Garland, the head of the Justice Department, and Jake Sullivan, basically, you know, the head of the intelligence community, if you will, were making personal phone calls to folks in the House. I want to know, did Merrick Garland call Mike Johnson? Did Jake Sullivan?
Yes.
And what did he tell him?
And what did they tell them? And what did they bring on? Benz, when's your next office hours?
Sunday at 3 p.m. every week for subscribers on my X account. It's you can ask me anything for 2 hours a week during that time.
Check them out, the Mike Benz Office Hours. I might have to stop by. Maybe I'll learn a little something. Come back next. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
All right, Jack Posobiec, we're back live. I want to tell you guys real quick about today's sponsor, My Patriot Supply. Just like the earthquake that shook the Northeast a few weeks ago or the attacks in the Middle East, most emergencies come without warning. And when the next one comes, you won't have time to pack and prepare. You need to get ready now before an emergency strikes. Your supplies need to be ready to grab and go right away. Secure these supplies at MyPatriotSupply.com. Start with a 4-week emergency food kit from My Patriot Supply. That's what my family did. Helping millions of Americans prepare since 2008, My Patriot Supply are the experts in self-reliance. Their 4-week emergency food kits offer over 2,000 calories per day, protected by heavy-duty 4-layer packaging. These kits last up to 25 years, sealed inside rugged-handled buckets. They're made to grab quickly. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. You'll save $50 per kit. They ship fast and free in unmarked boxes. Save $50 per kit at MyPatriotSupply.com, MyPatriotSupply.com. All right, we're getting some more information. There's a lot of information coming out now about this individual who set himself on fire. None of this is really confirmed right now, other than we've got this photo from Viral News NYC, who's a great on-scene reporter up there in New York. Go follow him at Viral News NYC on X. Has a photo of police investigators at the scene in this protest area, looking at the pamphlets, looking at the sign. And the sign reads, and I'm going to read this for you. We'll get the photo up when we get a chance. It says, Trump is with Biden and they're about to fascist coup us. So, you know, if that's true, then this is someone who is just completely anti-government, is not a Trump supporter, is not a Biden supporter. There you go. That's the last I've got. There's some reporting potentially of a name of the individual. There's some discussion about a manifesto. We will find out all of that in due time. So since none of that stuff is confirmed, I'm not going to report it right now. I'm just going to say that this is the type of stuff that we're hearing. And of course, we don't know what the medical update is on this protester, on this guy who potentially did this. But a guy that we do know a lot about and we need to know more about is named Ali Ghaffari, and he is leading a revolution. He's pioneering a revolution when it comes to classical education for children, specifically Christian classical education. And Ali, we had you on the other day, and you know, we had some live stuff going on, kind of like we do today, and we didn't get enough time to really dig into this. And this is something, what you're working on. We had the guys yesterday who were bringing Christ back to public school students, and the work with the Great Academy that's doing that. But this is something that I'm finding kind of a theme lately, really since Easter and since some of the discourse has turned in that direction. I said that Christians have to stop being passive and Christians need to start becoming more active. What's one way that you found yourself? I'll even ask you a personal question. What made you want to become an active Christian and put your faith first and so much of your time, your effort, your money, all of that into this project?
That's a great question. For me, it was the classics. It was coming face to face with Aristotle and Plato and reading the greatest works, the philosophy and the pursuit of truth, and joining that and realizing, gosh, I am made to live a life of virtue. And if I want to live a life of human flourishing, that I need to align my life in a certain way. And that naturally led to the discovery of faith for me out of the darkness of atheism and agnosticism. And then just as a parent, every parent naturally wants what's best for their children and what's better than heaven for your kids. And then here on earth and on their journey to heaven, what does that look like? It looks like a life filled with virtue and flourishing and joy and happiness, which naturally accompanies a fully lived Christian life.
So I'm cradle Catholic, you know, that's, you know, I always say we're Polish. We're pretty much only come in one flavor. Tell me a little bit about how the classics got you to Christianity.
Yeah. So when I was raised nominally Methodist, but I never really went to church. My mom had us go to church in high school, but by that time I was pretty much lost. And all of my teachers were atheists, and I bought into this relativism. And it wasn't until I was challenged by a Catholic friend who barely graduated high school, it was a self-made man. And he, you know, he asked me some questions about some research I was doing in college. We got about three questions in, and he realized I had no idea what I was talking about. And it was because in our public education system, which I was a student of, had taught me, and I was really good at just learning what are the basics to succeed on this test. What do I need to know? And then I'll flush it the next minute. And my knowledge is a mile wide and an inch deep. He exposed that. And then I had to re-examine my life. But my desire was to pull the rug out from under him and show him that his Catholic faith was wrong, and to do a battle of wits. And after a year of battling this out in the trenches, I decided that if you can't beat him, you have to join him. And then we started with Plato and Aristotle.
And that's very interesting. So you go back to Plato and Aristotle, because you know, obviously when people read the classics, Plato and Aristotle are not Christian. So it's this idea that it gets you from, but here's what I get from the classics. And this is something where I really don't want to get too much into the argument, but Plato and Aristotle believe in something a little bit different than what you would hear today. And yes, they believe in the ordered world. This was refined more in the Enlightenment to, you know, come to the natural order, the natural law. But what they essentially believed in was an ordered world. And so I guess what I would say is, if you believe in an ordered world, then that would presuppose an ordered universe, and an ordered universe would presuppose a creator for that universe. And so from that, you essentially get to the first mover, and the first mover would have to be God. Otherwise, you would have randomness.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And so what I read, you know, how Aristotle and Plato before him helped me was to come to the idea that God exists. And Aristotle was able to identify some very concrete characteristics of God, and those things aligned with the Christian vision of understanding of who God was. And so we brought reason along for me, and then united it with faith, and these two things working together and not in juxtaposition helped me along my path to become a Catholic. And so the desire for me was to have for my kids to come to that realization, for them to understand and to love truth and to want to live lives of virtue. And I understood from my own personal story, I grew up in poverty, but it was through education that I was able to come out of poverty into a middle-class living. And so I understood that the education is very powerful and invaluable in the formation of human beings. And I wanted my kids to have that. And so as I looked around at the schools where we landed in the military, I didn't find the school that I really wanted for my kids. I thought that was going to unlock this life for them where they loved Christ, they loved the church, and they had a good sense of both faith and reason together. And that's when I heard about classical Catholic education, but there were no schools nearby that could offer that. And so we started one.
And this idea of, you know, kind of pulling out of the public school system, you know, you were, I think, ahead of the curve on that because you started the school pre-COVID, right?
That's correct. Yeah, yep.
Right. So, and so pre-COVID, I always talk about it this way. We've got a minute till the break, but it's really interesting to me that there was this taboo towards from homeschooling to classic education. They say, what's wrong with the schools? Just go to the schools. The schools are fine. You know, just send your kid there. Plus it's free and it's hard to compete with free. And, you know, free, right? And the issue being though, people didn't know what was actually going on in those schools until COVID. And this is where you see the national sea change in public opinion on schools, because during the COVID process, when kids were going and studying at home and doing this, you know, class via Zoom, which is horrible just from an educational standpoint, that they were finally looking over the shoulder and seeing what was going on in the classrooms and saying, wait a minute, you know, why don't you know your times tables in fifth grade? And you're coming home and you're saying, what? That you want to be called, you know, different gender, different name, all this craziness. We'll be right back. Human Events Daily, Banner Day, talking about being active Christians in today's modern society. Stay tuned. Right back.
Jumping on my computer, going to pre-order town. Pre-order lunch, you can't wait to get my far. But I got a hankering, a yearning deep inside for this book called Unhumans I just can't hide.
All right, Jack Posobiec back live, and we're getting some more information about this individual who self-immolated. There's a lot out there, not completely confirmed, but I will say that there is some information that this individual may be associated with the Occupy movement and is a, you know, 99% versus the 1% is totally against the banks, totally against banking, and is very economically driven. And that's something where, you know, I got to say that, you know, looks, there's some, all right, not going to confirm that yet. So I'm not going to say, but looks like he may have supported some political candidates in the past. We're talking with Ali Ghaffari from Divine Mercy Academy. And I'll put it this way, Ali. The way that I see it is so many people, particularly millennials and younger millennials and starting Zoomers, you find this godlessness that comes in and a lot of trauma in these individuals. And I really believe it's because God has been removed so much from the public square beyond the teachings of Jesus, and that America has always been a Christian majority society. And so when you come back, right, you know, working back from the final goal of sending kids to a classic education based Catholic school or just, you know, Christian education in general, what are the effects on society when you take God away?
Yeah, so there was a concerted effort by John Dewey, Horace Mann, and socialists is probably the lightest way to put them, communists or secular humanists, to take God out with the idea of creating a utopia here in America. The younger the person was that they could get to try to condition them, the more likely they would be able to be completely formed in this communist ideal and to achieve, you know, true happiness. The goal was to eliminate crime. But the problem is God is, for them anyway, God is truth, beauty, and goodness. And so when you take truth, beauty, and goodness away from something, what are you left with? You're left with lies or falsity, ugliness, and evil. And so that's what we have. We have God removed from our schools, from our institutions, and we're seeing the rotten fruit of all of that now in our schools, and particularly, and they've been forming our kids in this way for several generations now at an increasing rate. And now we're just seeing this blossoming in our day today. And the fruit of our education are folks who become, they want to make the world a better place, but they have misplaced idea. They're miserable, they're empty, and they don't have God in their life, generally speaking. And so they want to make a change, but they don't know what that change is. They think, you know, there's some right that they want to have a voice to support, but that emptiness will not be filled by advocating for that right. It will only be filled by God.
And I've so in the book that I'm actually working on right now, it's Unhumans: The Secret History of Communist Revolutions, that we talk about how a lot of these revolutionary acts are formulated not based on an actual ideal of equality and progressivism and everyone succeeding. You know, that's just flowery language that they use for marketing. That at its core, what it really is driven by is envy and petty cruelty, and the idea that if people are successful, if people are well off, if people are doing well, if people are happy, that they are an oppressor, and those people must be torn down, their world must be destroyed. Because of course, as we see every time that one of these is tried, it never seems to work out in equality. It's not the people. Sure, they end up, there's a lot of suffering for the upper classes, but the lower classes have a lot of suffering too when one of these things get run out there. And I would always say that this is the problem of when you have tyranny without ethics, when you have tyranny or power without ethics, that becomes tyranny. And that's exactly what happens when you animate without a God. Tell us a little bit about the story of, just a couple of minutes left in the show here, but about Divine Mercy Academy and what led you to embark on this journey.
So when I discovered classical education, the beauty of it, and paired that with my love for my kids, the desire to bring them that form of education. And then I found other students, other parents, lots of families in the area who have shared the same vision and desire for their children. And we were able to gain momentum in support of this movement and to create a school. And we went from 19 to 45 to 85 to 114. Now we have 140 kids. We're slated for 170 kids for next year. We have 30 teachers on board. But you know, that movement, the most difficult part of that, I thought, might be to find the right teachers to come in and teach this, because none of us, few of us have been formed in classical education, but it's actually been the financial side of the house. And I think, this election cycle, we have one of the greatest opportunities we can to turn this whole thing around. Our system now, if you don't like what's coming out of our educational system, it's because we've shifted from a free market educational system where many kids were homeschooled, or there were private tutors or church-based schools, and we formed this public education system and then jammed the socialist ideology down their throats and for generations, and now this is the fruit. But if you want to remove that and open the floodgates for schools like Divine Mercy Academy and other schools that are doing good work in creating classical critical thinkers, folks who are people of virtue, then the way to do that is to support school choice, and particularly educational savings vouchers. And that will even the playing field, because parents who send their kids to a school like Divine Mercy Academy end up paying twice. They pay their taxes, and then they have to pay tuition again to go to a DMA. And that's hard for a lot of families. And so that's crushing for us, which means our teachers get paid less, far less than their public school counterparts, even though they're doing our kids are well prepared.
What is the website for anyone who wants to get more information?
DivineMercy.md.
DivineMercy.md. God bless you for being out there and being a public and active Christian. We need active Christianity. That is how we're going to take this country back. Return to our moral code. Send your kids to this school or schools like this. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, you have my permission to lay.